Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
So you're starting to get school again next week. What do you think about that?
Next week?
Yeah, next week. Hello. Did you pack your pencils?
No, I'm going to do that Sunday.
Or maybe Saturday or Friday.
Maybe Monday morning.
It's the final days of the summer holiday in Denmark, and that means school starts again next week. Suzanne Gargiulo is a writer and producer for CNN in Copenhagen. And for her two daughters, Sienna, who's 12 years old, and Sumie, who's 15, it's that time of the year when you're both excited and a little bummed about going back to school.
Okay, so what are you most excited about?
Seeing people again.
I don't really want to go to school again.
But you can't stay home your whole life, Sienna.
But I want to. I just want to stay home and eat chips.
For most students, here in the United States and around the world, this has not been the typical school year. But hearing Suzanne's daughters talk, it almost feels like things are back to normal. And in Denmark, it's pretty close. Picture this, families going on summer vacation, restaurants and stores open, lots of people just strolling down the streets. A small country in Northern Europe with almost 6 million people, Denmark was the first country in the West to reopen schools in mid-April. By then, the country had around 7,000 cases, and they were seeing fewer than 200 new cases daily. But most importantly, the R-naught, or reproduction number of the virus, had dropped below 1. Meaning that on average, each infected person was going on to infect fewer than one other person. As a result, the outbreak was shrinking. While Denmark has seen an increase in weekly cases recently, nearly 4 months into the reopening, there haven't been any major outbreaks reported in schools. Question I want to know, I'm sure you do as well, how did they do it? So today, I asked Suzanne to give us a peek inside Denmark's success and their plans to get kids back to the classroom. It's something the entire world is paying attention to. I'm Dr. Sanjay Gupta, CNN's chief medical correspondent, and this is Coronavirus, Fact versus Fiction. Let's start from the beginning with regard to COVID-19. When this virus first hit Denmark, how did the country respond?
Well, once they identified the first case on February 27th, in the next 2 weeks, we had 90 more cases, all of them Danes coming back from abroad, from Germany and Northern Italy primarily. So on the week of March 10th, they shut down everything. They closed the borders midweek, and during that week, they sent public workers home. They closed all the schools. They closed restaurants and shops. They banned gatherings of more than 10 people. There were no more visits to hospitals and elderly care homes and so forth. They put out hand sanitizing guidelines. They put out social distancing recommendations. So it was really a very swift and expansive shutdown that happened very quickly.
You have two daughters. They're similar in age to my daughters. When they decided to close the schools down, how did people feel about it?
I think they were prepared for it. And I think that there was a lot of relief, actually, among some people, because there was some concern that we would be facing what we were seeing people face in Italy and elsewhere. The kids were happy. They were out of school early. So they didn't really grasp at the time, I think, what the consequences were and how long this would last. But in general, it was very much expected.
Now, what is striking about Denmark is that they were the first Western country to reopen schools on April 15th. It's very early, and I'm just curious, because they were so early in terms of shutting things down, and they were very diligent and aggressive with the shutdowns. But when it came to that decision about reopening, were people worried?
Not really. At the time the schools opened, our infection rates were so low. There were very few cases. The other thing is that the schools were incredibly good at communicating. I mean, I got an aerial map of the school with entry and exit points, with all of the wash stations marked, with all of the guidelines for the children, with all of the numbers of children that were allowed to be together, the distancing rules. So all in all, I think we felt like they had prepared themselves so well, according to the government mandate, that there was really not a concern at the time. We didn't know what would happen. But at the same time, I don't think we could have been more prepared.
Yeah, it's really interesting because I think a lot of the world is now looking to countries like Denmark as they think about their reopening. I can tell you, certainly, we are here in the States. And, you know, there's a concern, people not agreeing on whether or not the school should open at all, or maybe just not this early. So let's go through some of the specifics of what happened in Denmark. There was a phased reopening process. Is that right? Younger kids started first?
That's correct. So we have four phases. We are now partially underway in phase four. But the very first phase that they decided to open up with were the young children to start school through grade five or age 12 approximately. And they started them up under an emergency curriculum and a limited amount of hours during the day. And I just don't think anyone could have anticipated what happened, because even weeks later, there was still a drop in infections. So even experts that were somewhat concerned that I spoke to prior to this were somewhat surprised that we had not seen even a slight spike in numbers due to these kids. So since then, there's been a lot of talk about, well, are kids less likely to infect other people? What is actually happening? If you ask the schools and the headmasters, and I spoke to several of them, they will tell you that what worked were social distancing and the hand washing and the hand sanitizing. They swear by it.
There were some pretty creative ways that the schools in Denmark had to keep students and staff safe. You mentioned, obviously, the physical distancing, the hand washing. Were there other interesting things that jumped out to you in terms of how they were accomplishing this?
This is going to sound a little bit strange, but there was a real joy about sending the kids back to school. I mean, they were so ready. And when I was watching the coverage, the local coverage of that day, it looked like the first day of school. The teachers were out meeting the children in front of the schools. They were carrying Danish flags, which is very traditional here. And when we have a celebration, they were, you know, obviously social distancing, but there was such a warmth and such a joy across the country because these children were so ready to come back. And one of the headmasters I talked to, it was so sweet. It's much easier to have the teenagers at school social distance and have them abide by the rules. But for the little ones, it was much tougher. So what they did was they had T-shirts made in different colors. So he had pods with blue, yellow, green, red T-shirts, and they were allowed to stay within their color zone in the playground. And so that meant that if a yellow T-shirt ran into the purple area, he said the other kids would immediately catch the yellow kids and send them back in the right venue, so that they sort of learned in a fun way to social distance. They weren't allowed to share pencils. They weren't allowed to share anything. They had to bring their own lunch. They had to bring the trash home from their lunch. They weren't allowed to share food.
I remember seeing a report with you and our colleague, Fred Pleitgen, where you were actually outside. I think some of the classes were being taught in a graveyard. Was that right? I wonder if you could tell me about that.
Yeah, that was great. It was a little school, and obviously we had a lot of space issues, because the first mandate was that the children had to be at least 6 feet apart or 2 meters apart. And that made it very difficult for some of the schools. So that meant that the whole community kind of stepped in, and we were seeing classes in ice skating rinks. We had churches, we had concert venues, we had theaters open up. So these students were just spread all over in order to make space for them. This particular church we visited was a small country church that was more than 1,000 years old, and they were actually being taught inside the church. And the teacher was on the pulpit, which was wonderful. And when we spoke to her, and they were running around outside in the cemetery, and they were doing statistics lessons. So they were calculating the average age of the people that had died, what was the month they were most likely to die. And the teacher said, well, it's just amazing because they love it. They think it's so interesting to see all these gravestones and these people. And they were kind of making a connection with this.
So instead of doing it inside the school, now we can use the cemetery. They can collect data and we can work with it, and they get much more curious.
Oh, you know, I think we learned that there's a lot of creative ways to school children, and they certainly enjoyed it.
It's interesting. You know, we did talk to a teacher in Denmark, and he told us that his school has basically shortened the school timetable. They're in essence teaching the basic subjects like English and math, but consider it more of an emergency sort of curriculum. What about all the other aspects of school, right? The extracurricular activities, the non-emergency curriculum type stuff. Is that still happening?
Well, I think it depends on the school. As far as I can see, and I've just read through all the documents, there's nothing that says it has to be Danish and math. But obviously, those are the important subjects to keep the kids up on. So art can wait, or piano can wait, or whatever it is can wait. But my oldest daughter pretty much had geography, French, Danish. She had her regular subjects when it was virtual. For the younger one, who was in school, it was Danish and math, basically. That was the primary classes they had. So, you know, depending on the school and the resources, again, it's almost like a wartime curriculum. So you do what you can with what you have.
Wartime curriculum, that's an interesting way of putting it. And you, with no obvious timetable, right? I mean, do you work under the presumption of some sort of timetable?
At this point, next week, they will start a regular curriculum. And if there is an outbreak, the school can go back to an emergency curriculum for 4 weeks. They are still instructing the children and teachers and schools that 1 meter distance is what should be taken, but it should not interfere with regular curriculum. So if you have a class where you cannot have 1 meter distance, then the 1 meter distance goes away. So we're really at a point now where they want to get this back to normal.
You know, the thing that I think surprised me the most when I read about Denmark was that masks were not required in the schools in Denmark, or even generally. It's not that commonly used. And it seems like it was fine in terms of the numbers still, at least at that time, going back to April. That's really surprising to me. You have a country that shut down early, that recognized the warning signs that they were seeing in other parts of Europe, were really diligent. Why not masks?
If you look at how our sort of corona process has run, we haven't seen it spike with or without masks. I mean, we haven't tried it without masks, but we were very efficient in lowering the rates when we decided to, through social distancing, hand sanitizing. I mean, you can't walk 10 meters in Denmark without running into hand sanitizer. People are very diligent about using those methods. This is just my presumption, but I think that's what they believe is the most efficient, because that's what seems to have worked here. I think they'll get there. As we open more up, nobody wants to step this back. We're going to crowd together more. And in that case, masks may make more sense because we're closer together. We were not at the time.
When you reflect back on Denmark, which is being held up as an example of a country that was able to reopen schools safely, or at least safer, what do you think, what do you point to as the reasons for that success?
I have to say, if it's in one word, it's trust. I think that there was a lot of trust in the government to handle this on our behalf. When it first started and when they came out, there was unity across party lines. Everyone stood together. I found it so unusual. I've never seen this before. And decisions were made. They were made swiftly. They were determined. And it worked. So people have listened and they've pretty much done what the government asked them to do in order to keep this down, and it's worked.
You are in a unique position, Suzanne, because you've lived, you're obviously living in Denmark, but you've also lived here in the States. You've, in fact, lived in the same city where I'm living now, here in Atlanta. So you have a unique perspective. Do you think what has seemed to work in Denmark could work here in the United States or in Atlanta?
I hate to say no, but if I am to be honest, I think it's difficult. Because there's just a very huge cultural difference in the way we choose to listen to government and authority. And Americans are more feisty that way, I think. They're not going to roll over as easy as we do here. There's just a plethora of thoughts and ideas and ways they believe things should be handled. And people are going to do their own thing.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. I think you're spot on, and it's tough. And hopefully we can learn lessons from places like Denmark and see some brighter days in the future. So thank you very much for your time. Really appreciate it.
You are most welcome.
Countries around the world have tried different strategies to reopen schools. Some have worked and some have not. And it's too soon to tell for many others. One thing is clear. It's important for schools to take precautions and enforce strict guidelines. When Israel reopened their schools in May, guidelines were not properly implemented and enforced. Within days, the virus spread through schools and families and into the communities. That spike in cases forced hundreds of schools to close. Israel's experience is a cautionary tale. If we are not careful, things can go south very quickly. In Denmark, both the government and the people did their part. As Suzanne said, trust was the key ingredient behind Denmark's success. I keep saying this, but we are really all in this together. And hopefully, as we figure out schooling for the coming year, we can all learn some lessons from Denmark's success. If you have questions, please record them as a voice memo and email them to asksanjay@cnn.com. We might even include them on the next podcast. We'll be back Monday. Thanks for listening. Coronavirus Fact vs. Fiction is a production of CNN Audio. Megan Marcus is the executive producer. Felicia Patinkin is the senior producer, along with Amanda Seely and Nadia Kunang from CNN Health. Raj Makija is the Senior Manager of Production Operations, with additional help from Michael Nettleman. This week's episodes were produced by Anne Lagamayo, Emily Liu, Aaron Mathewson, Evan Chung, Madeline Thompson, Rachel Cohn, Zach St. Louis, and Zoe Saunders. Nathan Miller is our engineer, and David Toledo is the team's production assistant. Special thanks to executive producer of CNN Health, Ben Tinker, as well as Ashley Lusk, Courtney Koop, and Daniel Cantor from CNN Audio.
Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.